Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and well, today it's kind of it's an Echo Chamber Podcast, but it's also a crossover with my good friend and colleague Linda Hayden from the Pack Woman Podcast. Linda, how are you keeping?
I am good, thanks, Tony. Everything's good here.
Yeah, you've been in lockdown in Kildare since was it 2008 now?
It's starting to feel like that. To be honest, like I was just saying to our guests there, I don't think I've ever spent this much time in this room that I'm in at the moment, and I'm sick of looking at it. And I'm sure that everybody else is sick of looking at it as well, because it's all people see on my Zoom, and I just seem to Zoom from morning till night. So
we should actually put the effort into putting the Zoom backgrounds or something. They were a thing for about a fortnight, weren't they? And then everybody said, no, screw that, I'm just leaving it as it is. Look, I got to do just a plug. I have to do the plug. We are putting out a lot of content, as I mentioned, the Pack Woman podcast, Glow West, the police podcast that's out today with, I'm going to ruin her name, Stefani Alaquinta Gonzalez, the Chilean student who spent 12 days in the Docus prison in Mountjoy, is brilliant. So, you know, if you like what we're doing, head to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and throw in the price of a cup of coffee. That's the housekeeping out of sight. We are delighted to be rejoined on the line by lecturer and director of Human Rights Law Clinic, Dr. Maeve O'Rourke. Maeve, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks very much, Tony. Very glad to be back.
Yeah, it's been mad. Like I was thinking this time last year we probably were at an event having wine and cheese or something, and the world seemed very different now, and here we are now all in our own little bubbles. But the reason we want to talk today is because of the imminent, and it is imminent, the idea that the state are going to seal the records for 30 years on the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. Maeve, do you want to just give us, first of all, a high level understanding of what is actually going on, and then we'll go from there, if that's okay.
Okay. In 2015, even though it had been well known for a very long time that mother and baby homes needed investigating, and same with the adoption system, there was huge uproar over the particular situation in Tuam. Thanks to Catherine Corliss's research, among other people's work, the international media just wouldn't let it go. Same with, of course, the national media that first broke it. The fact that there were hundreds of infants' bodies buried in a disused septic tank on the grounds of the former mother and baby home in Tuam. And this raised the question of the conditions in the mother and baby home there and other mother and baby homes, on what was the reason for these children's deaths, why were they buried unmarked, and ultimately the government agreed to set up a commission of investigation into 14 mother and baby homes plus a sample of county homes, so 18 institutions in total. And that commission has been operating for the last 5 years under the 2004 Commissions of Investigation Act, which is crucial to the situation we find ourselves in now. It's worth noting just at the outset that the 18 institutions that are being investigated really only represent a tenth of what Justice for Magdalene's Research and Adoption Rights Alliance, the two voluntary groups I help out, what ARA and JFMR estimate to have been the number of institutions, agencies and individuals involved in separating unmarried mothers and their children during the 20th century.
So you're talking about possibly 180 organizations or locations. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, we sent a list of more than 180 to the mother and baby homes, asking that one of its recommendations would be further truth-telling and investigation of the system more broadly. So that investigation has been ongoing. My particular involvement with the matters that it's investigating is twofold, I suppose. I've been working on, I suppose, legally advocating in relation to the Magdalene laundries for over 10 years. But one of the things that was so crucial when I was doing that was that we did a parallel investigation when the MAC lease inquiry was operating, because we felt worried about the fact that it wasn't investigating abuse, it wasn't using human rights or constitutional law standards to evaluate the evidence it was gathering. And ultimately, it was highly important that we had done our own 150-page analysis of 5,000 pages of evidence that we had gathered, including witness testimony, because we were able to give that to TDs and senators in 2013 when, on the day of the publication of the MacPhee's report, the government said, oh, well, this is all very interesting. We're going to have to think about this. It tells us a lot we didn't know, because it wasn't, the abuse didn't stand out because it hadn't actually been investigated. So in 2015, when the Mother and Baby Homes Commission was established, we did the same thing. So Adoption Rights Alliance and Justice for Magdalene's Research got together with a global law firm, their London office, Hogan Lovells, one of the biggest law firms in the world. And they gave us over 60 solicitors and provided free assistance for anybody who wanted to make a full witness statement with their supporting documentation to send that witness statement to the Commission of Investigation, because the Mother and Baby Homes Commission wasn't giving anybody assistance, legal assistance to make their best, to give their best evidence. It also was not going to give people a transcript of the evidence that they gave. So you wouldn't be able to say, well, this is what I told the commission and, you know, why are these the conclusions or whatever. And the solicitors in London also, and this is crucial for where we end up today, also, I suppose, undertook a lot of correspondence with the commission over a number of years. At the same time as helping people send witness statements, they were also asking procedural questions like, are you going to give people a transcript? If not, why not? This person would like a public hearing. Can they please have a public hearing? This person would like access to their personal data. And unfortunately, we were kind of seeing from the very beginning and extremely worried and more worried over time, nobody was allowed to have a transcript of their evidence. Nobody was allowed to have any access to the personal data the commission was gathering. The survivors of abuse and adopted people were not allowed to see any of the records or statements coming in from the church or the state or anybody responsible for running these institutions or anybody with expert knowledge. All of that is contrary to the rights of victims of torture and ill treatment, the rights of families of disappeared relatives to actually participate in a state investigation into their abuse. And now, and we'll talk about this now in a moment, I'm sure you have lots of questions. Now we are at a position where the commission has finished. It's due to give its report to the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman. And the question is, what happens to the archive that it has gathered?
So, Maeve, just to go back on that a little bit, what it sounds like to me is that the government set up this commission in order to tick a box, but they didn't really want to get to the root of what had actually happened, if they weren't willing to look at abuses or anything like that. So would that be accurate, or am I just spitballing? Like, it sounds to me like none of it is very transparent.
Well, the government kind of handed off responsibility to this commission that it established. There's a judge in charge, Judge Yvonne Murphy, and she's got two commissioners, Mary Daly and William Duncan. And I suppose to this day, the government has said, well, it's an independent commission. What it does is its business. The 2004 Act, of course, is the responsibility of the Oireachtas members who passed it in 2004. Michael McDill brought in that bill to give an alternative to the very expensive tribunals that we had seen up until that point. Like, they really went overboard with the secrecy that was allowed under the new model of a commission of investigation. So under the 2004 Act, a commission of investigation, and in this case, the Mother and Baby Homes Commission of Investigation, is at liberty to decide that everything it does should be in private. It has discretion. It could have held public hearings. It could have decided that it was in the interest of fair procedures to give all the survivors their own information, their own transcript, and also access to the evidence coming in so that they could comment on further lines of inquiry and what they thought of the evidence of those responsible. It didn't. And now the government's saying, well, you know, that was the commission's decision, nothing we can do about it. And then on the other side of things, separate to, you know, setting up a commission, what the government, of course, could have done, I mean, for the last 20 years in relation to so-called historical abuse generally, could have made access to the courts easier. in a number of ways, could have ensured access to legal aid, could have amended the statute of limitations to allow people to take cases that are older than the usual time period in the interests of justice. It could have given access to its own archives. It could have funded our national archives so that they are able to work with more than four government departments, as is presently the case. It did none of that because, and it could have also set up a dedicated criminal investigations unit. It could have ensured that the Gardaí were fully educated about what the abuse that happened in our range of institutions actually was and how it relates to our various crimes, because none of that seems to be understood. And none of that has been done. So there's been a very hands-off approach to this so-called historical abuse, where, you know, we've ended up with very little to no accountability.
And now that that is actually... And okay, so I want to just put that in context for listeners as well. It's not like Maeve just dropped out of the sky and started talking about this yesterday. There have been groups, you know, knowing that this was coming, that have been campaigning for the you know, I know Senator Lynn Rowan was working on the retention of records. You yourself, several groups have been doing this. They've seen this coming, you know, that this has been a problem for quite a while now. So I suppose... leaving aside, and it's hard to leave aside the fact that the state just outsourced it in effect to this department over, to this commission over here, and said, okay, we've left it over there, we've done our job, and we'll wait till it comes back. Now they are in a rush to suppress it in effect. Why are they in such a rush?
Well, so they will say, we're not suppressing anything. The commission is going to produce a 4,000 page report. Is that not enough? Like, that's going to be extremely detailed. Why should we need anything more? So that's what they are saying. Like, there's a 4,000 page report about to come out. What we are saying is that the commission's version of events and the perspective that it took, I mean, remains to be seen. What perspective was that? Is it a historical perspective? Is it a constitutional rights analysis? Are they going to look at European Convention on Human Rights violations? We have no idea. But that should be the beginning of the analysis of what happened, not the end. The Commission of Investigation should not have a monopoly on describing the history. So the issue now is the government says the public's going to get a report. The victims of abuse are going to get a report. We're going to seal the archive because we need to protect survivors of abuse. That's the rationale, and that was the rationale that was given last year when the Department of Education came out with the Retention of Records Bill 2019, which sought to seal for the next 75 years every single document in the Ryan Commission, which investigated industrial and reformatory schools. They said then too, we are protecting the victims and survivors who never want their personal information to be known. Now, nobody is asking for victims and survivors of abuse to have their personal information disclosed to the public. And there is a lot of misinforming going on by the government that is really what people want to see. That is not what any of us, and I speak, I suppose, as an academic, as an activist, that is not what we are asking for. We want people who are affected to have access to their own personal data, their own file, their own transcript of evidence. Yes, we also want them to have access to the historical archives. They have the right, as people who have suffered gross and systematic human rights violations, to be able to piece together the systems in which they were abused, and the same for their children, their grandchildren, their extended families. They need to be able to do their own research. They need to be able to go behind what the commission is saying and think and see for themselves. Does this make sense to me? Did they miss something? As I said, they should have been able to do this as the commission was operating. And then the general public has the right to be able to examine the archives of this gross and systematic abuse, because one of the purposes of redress, of truth telling, and one of the reasons that people who suffered abuse speak out is to prevent it in the future. And so we need to have national education And in order to have that, you can't just rely on a 4,000 page report written by one particular commission at one particular point in time with a given perspective. There has to be access to the archives. I mean, this is why we have national archives in our country in the first place. And so, like I say, we're not saying that we need to reveal or anybody wants to reveal personal details that victims and survivors of abuse do not want revealed, although they should be entitled to deposit their own testimony for public education or to deposit their own records. Some people want to do that, just like some people wanted public hearings and were denied them by the commission. And the same goes for the archives of other investigations, the McAleese inquiry. The Department of the Taoiseach is currently holding the entire McAleese archive, which actually only contains state records because the McAleese committee gave the church back everything that they gave them and destroyed all its copies. It was given no powers to compel evidence, so it had to enter into a voluntary arrangement with the nuns, and this was what was agreed. So all of the state files are being held by the Department of the Taoiseach, and every time we apply, even for the index to that archive, it is refused. And the department says, we are holding this archive for safekeeping and not for the purpose of the FOI Act. Now, happily, in January, the information commissioner found some lawyers pro bono, and a survivor took a case to the information commissioner. And the information commissioner found that it is not lawful for the Department of the Taoiseach to keep saying it's not holding it for the purpose of FOI. And the department's going to have to, you know, do better. And we haven't had a response. Now, also last year, like you said, Lynn, Rowan did amazing work getting together an emergency meeting of the Oireachtas Joint Committee on Education and Skills. And the same with Fiona O'Loughlin from Fianna Fáil, who's the chair of that committee. And they stopped the retention of records bill, but those archives are now in limbo. So what we are saying to Minister Roderick O'Gorman and the government now is, this has been going on far too long. We have a situation of sealed archives from the Ryan Commission to the McAleese Archive to now the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. You have to stop this. We haven't quite gone into, Tony, I'm sure you've got questions about the actual bill now and why it is that the Mother and Baby Homes Commission, they're saying, has to be sealed and all that. But in effect, yes, we have loads of sealed archives. And you might have heard kind of people talking a bit about whether what's going to happen in Sean McDermott Street. I'm involved in with architects in starting to look at whether the 2-acre site in Sean McDermott Street could be a multi-purpose site of memory, where alongside social housing and education and social enterprise space, you could have a museum and archive. But even before you begin to build an archive, personal data access is an immediate necessity, and that can be done straight away from the government departments that are holding these archives.
Just okay, so we've jumped ahead a little bit because you're so fast at putting this in sequence. But some of the stuff that's happening now is I know the previous minister, Catherine Stapone, was involved with it. She was working on it on the basis that they were trying to find a workaround. That never happened. The government failed. They went to an election, and now the new minister, Roderick O'Gorman, for his part, is putting his hands up saying, I'm out of this because this was the previous thing, and it's only a couple of weeks left before the commission finds this thing, and I'm just following the procedure. You pointed out that that's not actually legislatively not actually strictly true, because they have passed data to TUSLA. So is his logic flawed?
Okay, so I'll talk about the bill. I know I do kind of jump around.
You're okay.
We're all swimming in a sea of ceiling. But just to kind of explain the bill that's been rushed through the Seanad this week and the Dáil next week, there has been no pre-legislative scrutiny, no consultation, nothing. So the bill was brought in by the minister yesterday to the Seanad. It is called the Commission of Investigation, Mother and Baby Homes and Related Matters Records Bill. And what it does is it confirms to the Mother and Baby Homes Commission that its requirement under Section 43 of the 2004 Act to transfer documents to the minister when it finishes its job, that should be without redacting any personal data. For some reason, the Commission of Investigation seems to have told the minister that it can't transfer its its database until it gets new legislation, which makes no sense to me because the existing act requires it to transfer every single record. And of course, the GDPR, number one, is all about access to personal data, not destroying it. And number two, allows archiving in the public interest as a form of data processing. So the minister is entitled to take full custody. But for some reason, the commission said it needed new legislation. So that's a fine thing for the minister to be doing. I've no problem with that. What I do have a problem with is the other part of his bill is to separate the archive. So he actually doesn't. He's bringing in a bill to change the existing requirement that the commission gives everything to the minister. And instead, he's saying the commission should give away part of the archive to Tuzla and that he won't even keep a copy. So he is interfering with the integrity of one of the most important archives in our state without any consultation, and sending to Tuzla a database and related records of mothers and children who were detained in 15 institutions. There's a problem with sending things to Tuzla.
We all share that concern.
Resources, but not only that, they're very legally problematic and discriminatory approach to interpreting the GDPR and the meaning of personal data and the meaning of third party data. And it's very clear from adopted people in particular that even their first name at birth is considered third party data, and that they are not allowed to have it until Tuzla has gone through a risk assessment of contacting natural extended family members if their parents are dead, and trying to find someone in the natural family who will agree to the adopted person knowing their first name. And so ministers opponents set up a collaborative forum of people with experience of mother and baby homes and adoption, specifically to recommend to the government what should happen around everything to do with mother and baby homes and adoption. And they repeatedly recommended that Tuzla have nothing more to do with information tracing. So what the minister should be doing is taking the entire archive and then enabling data access, as his department does on a daily basis when people apply for anything that the department holds on them. So this is a real outsourcing of responsibility, because I suppose the department did not want to have this data in its possession. And then I suppose where things get even more complex, but really, really, really important, is in all of his briefings on this bill, the minister kept saying, and as everybody knows, everything else I receive that doesn't go to Tuzla is going to be sealed for the next 30 years. Now, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is likely to be hundreds of thousands of documents demonstrating how the entire system was run, all of the administrative files, the financial records, the diocesan records, the correspondence, the diplomatic records, every government department's records, like everything, including also all the transcripts of evidence, all to be sealed for the next 30 years. The minister hasn't actually explained where that requirement comes from. They haven't been able to point to a particular section of the 2004 Act. It doesn't say seal in the 2004 Act. My kind of what I've researched would kind of suggest to me that where it's coming from is, number one, under Section 41 of the 2004 Act, it says that any departmental record that would otherwise have been a record destined for the National Archives will need to be sealed for another 30 years before it goes to the National Archives, which is pretty outrageous, given that it's containing abuse and that, or evidence of abuse, and that's why it gets sealed for another 30 years. And then there's another section, 11(3), subsection 3, which says it's a criminal offence to disclose for any person to disclose any evidence given to the commission in private. Now, that actually doesn't contain a 30-year limit. Mm-hmm. So I actually think that technically you could read the 2004 Act to say everything other than a departmental record that the commission chose to gather in private is sealed forever. So number one, they haven't even explained what this sealing for 30 years even means or where it comes from. But number two, and this is a chink of light, a ray of hope, and a really good thing, by deciding that the Oireachtas should send part of the archive to Tuzla, not that we want them to do that, but the principle of it, it shows that they know that the Oireachtas can legislate to, quote unquote, unseal whatever part of the archive that it chooses to. So that is a good thing. And A key amendment that we want in this bill is a requirement that the minister will produce an index to the archive that he receives from the commission within a month of getting it. It can be anonymized to the extent necessary to protect people in their private capacities, but we would have an index. It should be a very long one. And then we'll be able to see what kind of legislation is needed to now create proper access to information to those administrative records. Immediately, we can see how the personal data access is going. We believe the minister should be providing it now, but will there need to be more legislation to provide that too? Can we bring in the sealed archives of the MacLeish inquiry, of the Ryan Commission, have truth-telling legislation? And might it down the road then be connected to the creation of a dedicated archive for national truth telling, so that the legislation could be created immediately and it could operate vis-a-vis, you know, the departments that hold archives, they could start making it available. But in due course, it would allow transfer to somewhere special that would operate alongside a museum.
Just on the, sorry, Linda, just on the, in the last couple of hours, we've seen the article from Paul O'Donoghue in the Times where he said the minister himself said that he doesn't know what are sealed in the records himself. Part of me thinks there's two things going on there, and I speak in my own personal capacity here. One is maybe he doesn't want to know, and this gives him credence to pile ahead and say this happened before. You know, it was like that when I got here. And then the other aspect is, surely we scream stop, we scream pause. And we say, let's have that conversation before we make a decision that puts everything out of reach for 30 years.
But we are seeing that, Tony. Like the senators yesterday said that they have never in 24 hours had the level of engagement from the public to say, whoa, give it over. And I think why it's so emotive is, we know that this state has failed people. We know that the state has traumatized people. And what they're doing now is traumatizing people even further and opening up the potential for even more trauma down the line. And what it's also doing is it's kicking the can down the road. Like, it seems to me like they're trying to avoid having to pay redress. And There must be stuff in there that is super explosive that's going to mean that they are going to be out of pocket. And also the church is probably pressuring them to make sure that doesn't happen. And it just seems like we can all nearly see it. It's really tangible for us to see what they're doing. And they're going to try and press ahead with it. And I think that can't be allowed. There has to be full engagement with all of the people who are involved, all of them.
Maeve, I should put it to you that, accepting what Linda has said, that there's an element here of self-interest, there's an element of the state that maybe has motives to protect itself from certain situations that may develop should the information become public. And it also puts the state in a position whereby if you stop this, power protects power. And that's not necessarily people who are bad faith players or doing something, you know, if you're part of an organization and you're going to suffer reputational damage, you push back against that to try and suppress it as much as you can. But taking this even taking what I've just said and putting it aside, there's also a balancing of rights here of the individuals who are having their data put away. They're being denied the access to it. They're being denied the access, as you said, to make it to a public inquiry. They're being denied effectively access to justice in many respects as well, even so late. And to use your word, and we call it so-called historic. It's not historic for these families, for these people. This is their lives. How do we balance their right to identity and then versus the right to privacy? Or is that the argument that we should be having once we press pause on this process?
Yeah, I think you're getting at the government's arguments in relation to adoption information and tracing in particular. So we can talk about that, and that is unfortunately the only form of access to information that Minister O'Gorman has even recognised needing to legislate for in the future, and he has continued with the highly problematic description of the complex constitutional issues that arise. And we can talk about that now in a sec. But like, there has been no recognition at all, really, from the state that people who suffered forced family separation have rights, full stop, and are data subjects at the very least, with the right to personal data access, let alone people with rights to an effective investigation, such as would, you know, be required for anybody who'd suffered torture or other forms of ill treatment, that what's happening here is enforced disappearance to the extent that people still can't find out the fate or whereabouts of a family member who was abducted or detained with the knowledge of the state. So we're like missing that whole basic starting point. And unfortunately, that was missing then in the past few years in relation to adoption information and tracing. The right to privacy is a right of adopted people as well as natural parents. It's not that there's a right to identity versus the right to privacy. This system of forced family separation was a massive interference with everybody's right to respect for their private and family life. And that has to be recognized, because to continue to deny people access to their most basic information is a continued interference with their right to respect for their private and family life as private individuals with equal rights. Do they really need more state intervention in their private relationships? The 2016 Adoption Information and Tracing Bill went through a lot of different versions, but what was always at the core of it was some way of being able to stop all adopted people knowing their name. So there was always this desire to make sure that adopted people had to apply, had to be kind of vetted almost, had to, if there was a suggestion that a natural parent didn't want to be contacted, so bear in mind there's a difference between contact and knowing your name. If there was a suggestion that they didn't want to be contacted, the Adoption Authority of Ireland would hold a hearing where an adopted person would have to argue as to how badly they wanted or needed to know their name at birth. And then the Adoption Authority would sit in judgment of that and weigh up, I don't know what, evidence of a statistical likelihood, perhaps, that if they knew their name, they would harass a parent. I mean, it actually beggars belief sometimes, because there was no kind of evidence put forward, and there is no evidence from other countries, and it is so discriminatory to apply this blanket characterization of adopted people that somehow knowing their name is going to lead to harm. There is no evidence. And there are some social workers who say that women whose children were taken for adoption were promised that no one would ever know who they are. They swear to that, these social workers swear that that's what some women were told. Now, the fact is that every birth cert in Ireland has been a public record since the mid-1800s. That promise could never have been made. If you want to know whether your next door neighbour had a child, you go to the General Register office and you buy their certificate if you know their name, if you know their birthday. So it is a fallacy that people were guaranteed secrecy. So an adopted person, if they do, I mean, adopted people nowadays, not to mention with DNA testing, but generally, you know your birth date. Ireland's a small country. It is possible to go to the General Register office, to pull every record from everybody who was born the same day as you, and to figure out your name. So the reason I think I feel that connected to this is, if they can stop you knowing your name, they can say you can't have your file. And I do think the two things are connected. Going back to what Linda has just said about why is there a reluctance to give people the files? One big, objectively clear point is that if people get the information in a document, it may allow them to sue. Mm. I mean, that's objectively the case. It's a fact. And our statute of limitations operates such that if you only found out the facts of the injury, you can argue that the limitation period only starts now.
Yeah, starts from that date.
What is the statute of limitation on things like state violence or abuse?
So it depends with the timing of the injury, but it's either 2 years or 6 years. And there's
so not long, really.
There's not much way of getting around it. So,
but sorry, Maeve, we have seen cases where things have been suppressed to the point where the victims are deceased and the families are left. And, there's, you know, we know the tragic people, the names. I worked with people who, you know, I won't name people just because I don't want to, because it's not my right to. But, you know, who I shared offices with, who are no longer with us, their family got justice after they were gone. And when I say justice, I say loosely an apologies issue from the state. But there was no comfort for the institutionalization of that, these individuals' lives and how they were treated. And a financial imperative should be no blocker to access to identity, truth, and transparency should you choose it. And it's not for us to choose, surely.
And redress doesn't necessarily have to be financial. A lot of people just want an apology.
And it's an insult, but it's an insult that has been thrown at survivors of this gross abuse for decades. And you even see it in other countries too. I gave evidence a couple of weeks ago to the Scottish Parliament about their redress for child abuse and care bill, which, just like ours did, requires people, if they accept a very small payment, to sign away all their rights in court. And my point was, I think what we've seen here is that creates a message. It sends a message to the public and to the people who suffered abuse. You're only interested in money. You are happy to sign away your rights once you get money. It is insulting, it is degrading, and it actually is highly harmful to our ability to protect from abuse in future, because if we don't allow accountability in the sense of access to information, access to the courts, allowing people to, you know, pressure the guards into investigating, then how on earth are we supposed to protect this from happening, prevent this from happening in the future? And how does that demonstrate that we respect the dignity of the people who suffered this in the past? So there's a massive problem there that you rightly point out. Of course, that's not to say that people don't need financial redress, and that is absolutely their right. And it is very much connected to rehabilitation to the extent that that might ever be possible. As people get older, and I see it so much with women who are in Magdalene laundries, they need to make adaptations to their house. They need heating. It is heartbreaking, and it shouldn't have to come out of their limited payments, but invariably the payments are used for those most basic of things, and they still can't afford proper home care, which would prevent them having to be reinstitutionalized in a nursing home, which is just horrendous.
It's the trauma thing again, because when you've been a victim of trauma, you tend to be disadvantaged, and particularly in mother and baby homes, where potentially people were pulled out of education to be put into the home and they weren't given the education. So they are oppressed in terms of what their potential could have been in life. And therefore, that does have a knock on effect as you get older and your needs increase, that you haven't got the resources there because you were never given those tools. So it's that, and particularly because these people are now becoming more aged, that there has to be something put in place, and that accountability. And, you know, you made an interesting point earlier on about the commission being able to make recommendations about legal and criminal things. There has to be, we have to start holding people to account. And it's like what you said about the tribunals. We had tribunals that cost billions and nobody was held to account. There is no level of accountability, and that these commissions should, the ultimate goal of them should be, whose fault was it and what are we going to do about it? And I think kicking this down the road 30 years just shows that the government has no interest in that level of accountability.
I suppose we bring this to a close now and talk about what we can do now and what we can do. Maeve, if you want to just say what is the call to action?
Okay, we have three key amendments for this bill. So that's really immediate because it's this week and next week. Number one, the minister takes the whole archive from the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. Number two, he immediately facilitates all personal data access requests to that archive. Number three, he produces an index to the archive within a month because, as I've been saying earlier, the archive is absolutely enormous. And so beyond personal data, it includes all of the administrative records. It's really immediate. Once he produces the index, then we can have a consultation and debate on what we do in response to this Mother and Baby Homes report as a measure that seeks to address our previous failings and to include all those affected, not just by the 18 institutions that were investigated, but by the whole system of family separation, also the people who've been let down, who are in Magdalen laundries, in industrial reformatory schools. This is often the same people because of the whole system of abuse. So there are outstanding promises on memorialisation across the board. The very first recommendation of the Ryan Commission was that there should be a national memorial to ensure this never happens again and to ensure national education. The Quirk report and even the Taoiseach Enda Kenny and his apology to Magdalen survivors, that was a huge thing, a memorial, national education. And we heard from the hundreds of women who gathered in Dublin at Dublin Honours Magdalens. And so, we have a lot of recommendations in the CLAN project report to do with access to court, criminal inquiries. And so that's all really important. On the memorialisation and national education front, I think that we now need to look at how to legislate for and then create the place of truth-telling and education. And my view is that that could find a very good, effective home in the centre of our city, as part of a proper regeneration of that site at Sean McDermott Street.
I suppose when we spoke a couple of years ago, Maeve, we spoke about that if we can't own our history, how do we ever acknowledge it? How do we truthfully face it? And burying it is not going to be the answer. And I mean, look, the call to action is quite clear, guys. Please make sure that they know that this is not acceptable. This is not good enough. Dr. Maeve O'Rourke, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk to us on the podcast today.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony.